This call is being recorded.
Good morning, everyone. This is Sierra Dahl with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum. And today we have Katie Ramsey from the Clean Coalition talking about the California Transmission Access Charge. So, Katie, why don't you go ahead and tell us what's going on in California?
Happy to do so. Thanks for having me on today, Sierra. So I want to talk about transmission access charges. This is basically the cost recovery mechanism for the California transmission system. And the issue with how it works in California right now is that effectively those charges are being misapplied to energy from local renewable projects. This is a big issue because the energy from local renewables that is directly connected to the distribution grid is located very near customers and end users. So when that energy is delivered, it's delivered over the local distribution grid versus the transmission grid. But in practice, the way that the California Transmission Grid Operator, or CAISO, the California Independent System Operator, we refer to them as CAISO, the way that they're assessing transmission access charges means that energy from local projects are being subject to those costs. So right now, transmission access charges only make up about 10 to 15% of the retail cost of energy. But the issue is that transmission access charges are projected to grow very quickly over the next 20 years. Historically, they've increased at about 7 to 9% per year. And so when you're looking at a 20-year contract, the portion of your energy cost that's going to be going to transmission bills will increase dramatically. The 20-year levelized cost for most projects in Northern California is about 3 cents per kilowatt hour. So when you're looking at 20-year contracts where the cost of just generating the electricity is falling quickly to 5 or 6 cents per kilowatt hour, having a 3 cents per kilowatt hour transmission access charge is a serious market signal that is problematic. So the Clean Coalition is an organization that is primarily focused on making sure that local renewables are part of the greater energy mix. Our mission is for by 2020 for 25% of all new generation to come from local renewables. And so we see the Transmission Access Charges campaign as a very important way to make sure that local renewables are cost effective. So just for a little bit of background on how we got to this issue, the Clean Coalition has been working with CAISO to identify how transmission access charges are being applied, and it took a lot of digging, even with CAISO staff, to figure out how this works. These details aren't obvious in the CAISO transmission tariff, and so we had to ask CAISO staff to work with us to research exactly where the metering is, how those costs are allocated, and really just how this works. So what seems like a relatively easy answer of you know, what is the billing determinant for transmission access charges? It took us months of working with the experts to figure it out. And what we found out is that there are two different ways that transmission access charges are assessed in California. The way it works for most of the investor-owned utilities, namely PG&E or San Diego Gas and Electric or Southern California Edison, is that transmission access charges are applied to every kilowatt hour that crosses the customer's meter. So they're aggregating all the customer's meters and saying, okay, they use this quantity of energy, they apply the transmission access charges rate to it, and that's the cost. The issue with doing it that way is that if you are metering usage of the transmission system at the customer's meter, you're also capturing not only the energy that comes from the transmission system, you're also capturing the energy that comes from local renewables. When local renewables are built on the same distribution grid, that energy is flowing to customers only through the local power lines, not through any sort of high-voltage transmission facilities. So by applying transmission access charges to energy from those systems, you're making those costs artificially higher than they really are. Part of why this is a problem is that not only is that energy not flowing across the transmission grid, in addition, local renewables are actually reducing the need for additional transmission spend. So when you put more local renewables in the energy portfolio for any given location, the transmission needs for that area go down. And that makes sense, right? Because if you're generating energy close to where the customers are, you don't need transmission lines to deliver that. So not only is that energy being delivered without the use of those systems, but it's also freeing up capacity on the transmission system for other energy to come across. So it lets the existing transmission facilities work for longer. Over the long term, this means that you don't need new transmission investments. So that saves everybody money. In California, all those costs are spread through the ratepayers, through all ratepayers, through the transmission access charges methodology. And so if you can create a more accurate market signal for the cost of delivering local renewables, then you would see a correction in the market to make sure that there are more local renewables being procured. So that's what the Clean Coalition discovered when working with CAISO. So we raised this issue, we got some preliminary answers, and we started making a policy argument for why this needs to change. And we've been working with them through their administrative process. Here they have a stakeholder initiative. So they identify an issue, they create an issue paper, and stakeholders are invited to comment on different options, different solutions, or different ways to address the problem. So the Clean Coalition has been working with CAISO to do that over the last year and a half. And this particular issue of how tax affects local renewables has been bounced around between initiatives. So after being bounced to our now upcoming fourth stakeholder initiative without any sort of resolution, the Clean Coalition is now pursuing a two-track approach to getting this issue resolved. We're continuing to work with CAISO through their upcoming stakeholder initiative to find an administrative solution to this issue. And in addition, we're also trying a legislative approach. So the Clean Coalition's solution to all of this is basically you change the metering point for energy from the customer meter to the transmission energy downflow. So what is the transmission energy downflow? That basically is you would place the meter at the transmission to distribution substation so that only the energy that's coming off the transmission system and onto the distribution grid would be subject to transmission access charges. So earlier I had mentioned that there are two ways that transmission access charges are allocated in California. The first, the one that applies to 75-80% of customers in California, is that they meter at the customer energy downflow, at the customer meter. That's how it works for the big IOUs. However, there's a smaller, less common methodology where they're actually using the transmission energy downflow methodology already. For municipal utilities that have a metered subsystem agreement with CAISO, they are paying tax charges exactly as they should. They pay transmission access charges only on the energy that's coming off the transmission grid. And what that means for those municipal utilities is that the market signals for local renewables in contrast to centralized projects are much more accurate than what you would see in any of the IOU territories. So, for example, the city of Palo Alto has a metered subsystem agreement with CAISO, and so they're paying transmission access charges on the transmission energy downflow exactly as we think everybody should be doing. So what this means is that the city of Palo Alto has recognized that their energy that comes from local sources or local renewables is able to avoid transmission access charges and is therefore functionally cheaper to their customers than energy that comes across the transmission grid. So this works. This resulted in more renewables in Palo Alto, and this is exactly the approach that the Clean Coalition wants to see spread throughout the state. So this is what we've been advocating for in the stakeholder initiatives before CAISO. And it's also the proposal that's included in a legislative proposal that we've introduced. So we shopped this idea around to a series of state senators and assembly members, and we found multiple legislative champions there. So Senator Ben Allen and Assemblymember Mark Berman, as well as Senator Scott Wiener, have all introduced SB 692. This is a bill that would direct CAISO to change where they're billing for the purposes of tax to the transmission energy downflow. So it would be directing them to move from having the two current approaches to just having a single approach where all transmission access charges are applied based on the energy that's actually coming off the transmission system. So this has a number of very important solutions, impacts, if we can get it through. The first is that energy that comes from local renewables won't be subject to transmission access charges. So that means that an artificial cost on local energy will be removed. This is going to make a big difference, a huge difference in procurement decisions. Right now, when a utility in California, particularly the IOUs, are trying to decide which kind of energy project to procure energy from, they often use what's called the least cost best fit methodology. So they compare the cost of generating energy between all their projects, and they also look at the cost of any immediately triggered upgrades in the transmission system. But what they don't consider in these procurement decisions is the day-to-day cost of delivering that energy. So they don't consider transmission access charges. It makes a big difference if you're comparing a central generation project to a distributed generation or any kind of local renewable option, because oftentimes DG projects are slightly more expensive. And part of that is the location that they're sited at tends to be, you know, a built environment where there's already competing uses for that land. The rent cost can be higher. You can't hit the same economy of scale benefits that you can get from a lot of central projects. But there are other benefits that local renewables have to offer. The biggest is that since that energy is sited close to where the customers are, you don't need to use the transmission system. But if you don't factor the cost of delivering that energy into these procurement decisions, that benefit is entirely lost. So what we're proposing in SB 692, as well as in all of our administrative proceedings, is that local renewables shouldn't be subject to transmission access charges. And so SB 692 would change that. So what we would see is these least cost best fit methodologies would start incorporating the transmission cost, because it would finally be different between these two different categories of projects. If only central generation projects are subject to transmission access charges, then the cost between those central generation projects and local renewables would oftentimes be much, much closer. So you would see more and more distributed generation projects actually winning procurement decisions, at least in some cases where it's a close call. And so this would prompt more local renewables. Over the long term, this makes a big difference for everybody, even the customers that aren't in the service territory that's having any sort of distributed generation involved. So we received information from CAISO, and this is all public, that the projected tax rate is projected to go up about 9% year over year. So that means that the 1.7-cent tax rate that we're seeing today is going to end up being, you know, over 4.5 cents 20 years from now. So when you're looking at what that levelized cost is for a 20-year contract, it means that those costs are about 3 cents per kilowatt hour. But if you put more local renewables on the grid, that tax rate increases at a much slower rate. So if you have more local renewables, then your existing transmission facilities work for you for longer. There's more capacity on the system. So there's a decreased demand for new transmission investments. And because all ratepayers share the cost for those new transmission investments, it means that everybody would save money by a slower growing tax rate. The Clean Coalition has modeled out what these actual cost savings would look like. And we found that over the course of 20 years, California ratepayers would save an estimated $38.5 billion. The thing is that transmission facilities are so expensive. They're incredibly expensive, and the process for figuring out where transmission is needed is highly technical and somewhat esoteric, so there's not a lot of public comments or insight on these issues, but all the ratepayers get sacked with the cost. So if you're dealing with distorted market systems where local renewables appear artificially more expensive than they are, then we're missing out on opportunities to use local renewables in order to avoid transmission costs. And so this is why the Clean Coalition has found this to be a very important issue, and why we're working so hard on a number of different approaches to fix it. So it would make a big difference immediately for procurement decisions, and it would make a big difference over the long term for saving all of California ratepayers' money. So this is why it's an important issue for us. I should probably talk a little bit on what has changed since the last time I talked to this forum. I gave a webinar a few months ago, I guess, at this point. But since then, we have expanded our approach from just participating in CAISO stakeholder initiatives, to now we're also pursuing a legislative approach. We've gotten great support from Senators Allen, Weiner, and Assemblymember Berman of the California State Legislature, and so we're actively trying to support them in moving this forward. This is a particularly exciting time for us this week and next because SB 692 is going up for hearing before the Energy, Utility, and Communications Committee in the Senate on Tuesday of next week, April 4th. So that's going to be the time where we have some public advocacy on this issue and raise some more attention and hopefully get through this next step in the legislative process. So hopefully that moves forward. We are organizing all of our supporters to participate there and to send in support letters. And we're doing all this while waiting for CAISO's next stakeholder initiative to open up on this topic. We would love to find an administrative solution to this by working jointly with CAISO, but they have a lot of competing priorities, and so we know that this is not a priority for them. So we're just trying to take action to make sure that this issue gets resolved. We see a number of different organizations or categories of ratepayers benefiting from this kind of fix in the transmission access charges system. In particular, community choice energy programs have a lot to gain through this. We know that community choice programs are expanding rapidly across California. The Peninsula Clean Energy Community Choice Program, where I live, is coming online any day now. And it's a very exciting time if you're interested in local renewables. Because so many of these community choice programs have a stronger commitment to local renewable energy than the investor-owned utilities, we want to make sure that there are very accurate market signals for the cost of delivering energy so that when the CCAs or CCEs are comparing central generation projects to local renewable projects, we want to make sure that they're considering the day-to-day cost of delivering that energy and that there are market signals that correspond to the benefits of each different kind of project. So we think that SB 692 would properly reduce tax for community choice programs that actually use renewable projects. So we think that they have a lot to benefit from this. Of course, ratepayers have a lot to benefit. If you can make sure that we're only building transmission facilities where they're really needed, then everybody saves money. Like I said earlier, we've modeled out that over the 20-year period that California ratepayers would save over $38.5 billion over the next 20 years. I mean, billions with a B, not just millions. Like, transmission facilities are really expensive, and if we can avoid them, then everybody saves money. And in particular, I should point out that even CAISO knows that local renewables save ratepayers money. There have been a couple of different news articles recently that highlight that specific transmission projects are put on hold due to growth in local solar. We have an example where PG&E canceled a $192 million transmission project due to better than expected energy efficiency and local solar projects. So those are projects that would have otherwise cost California millions of dollars that were avoided because of local renewables. So if we can make sure that the market signals for the benefits of these local renewables are really accounted for in procurement decisions, everybody's going to benefit. We'll see more and more of these transmission projects put on hold or canceled because the demand for those new projects is just lower. Of course, there are lots of other reasons why any utility should consider local renewables very strongly. Obviously, they keep energy dollars local. So if you have more local renewable projects, more of your constituents' energy dollars are staying local and spurring economic development closer to home. So this is particularly important for a lot of CCAs or community choice programs that, you know, want to make sure that their communities are thriving. Also, local renewables come online faster than remote power plants. Because they're smaller and there's a little bit less involved in terms of permitting, in some ways there's less involved in permitting, they can come online faster. So you don't have to wait for 20 years for this new energy project to come online. the Clean Coalition also finds it very important that they protect pristine environments. There are a lot of environmental reasons for choosing local as opposed to central. Not only are you protecting pristine environments from remote power plants, you're also protecting them from all the long-distance transmission lines that are required to get energy from central power plants all the way to consumers. And last, local renewables offer a lot of benefits in terms of local resilience. If you can build local renewables close to where the people are, then they are more resilient in the event of any sort of natural disaster or grid outage. So there are loads of reasons to want to make sure that local renewables can fairly compete. And the Clean Coalition thinks that addressing the transmission access charges market distortion is the biggest opportunity to do so. So we are busy working on it, and if anyone is interested in more information, I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Okay. You have any questions?
This is Evan. I wrote down a number. In particular, I was going to ask about your contacts with the Peninsula Clean Energy, but I see that you already are working on that one.
Well, you know, that one's particularly interesting to me because I live in that service territory, so I'm excited about it. And
so do I.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to what kind of commitment they'll have to local renewables. And we are just now laying the groundwork for officially working with them on the transmission access charges issue. So we'll be talking to a couple of staff members there on Friday morning.
I know George Wilsey and Dan Lieberman and Jan Pepper are the three that I know there.
Okay. That's great. We've been in touch with Jan Pepper, and I can't remember who she suggested that we meet with on Friday. But I think we've got our ducks in a row for remaining and talking this through with Peninsula Clean Energy. So we are excited to try to get them on board with this campaign. The biggest challenge that we faced with getting community choice energy programs on board is simply a matter of bandwidth for a lot of these organizations. Since community choice energy programs tend to be a little bit smaller than some of the IOUs, it means that they have smaller staff and less time and money and staff hours to devote to some of these policy problems. So we are excited that there is now a larger umbrella organization for a lot of the CCAs, Cal CCA, and so we're hoping to work with them too. So we are definitely working on it, and I would love to talk with you afterwards about making sure that we have contacts at the different organizations to make sure that we're covering all our bases and reaching out in the right way.
George Wilsey told me that they wanted to have local. I was making exactly the case you did, that with local generators, they would have the economic activity within their own service territory.
Mm-hmm.
He said that they knew that and they hope to find some. They haven't yet. He mentioned one potential new contract that's up in Tracy. That's in the Bay Area, but pretty far part of the Bay Area from San Mateo County. I mm-hmm. think from in part from listening to Sierra's broadcast that Marin and Sonoma already have brought in local renewables to their CCAs. Have you been in touch with them? And they may have some numbers for you on how much money they could save with this legislation.
We have reached out to Marin Clean Energy a while ago, and they may have brought in some more local renewables than the last time I talked to them. And, you know, even the IOUs have some local renewables. We would love to see more, obviously, and we think that there's a lot of potential for any IOU or community choice energy program to get more. Part of the reason that it's not more prevalent than it currently is because of the tech. So I will definitely be following up with Marine Clean Energy and Sonoma Clean Power to see if they have any kind of numbers. I think that's a great idea, Devin.
Mm-hmm. And they're forming another one we've learned about in Sierra's calls is up in Humboldt County. They were on, what was it, last week? Recently, Sierra, they were on.
Right, Matthew Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
And, Canada Yolo County is also forming a CCA.
What was the other one you named?
Yolo County.
Oh,
Davis.
Okay, right.
Jerry, you're on here. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on there?
We've seated a board of directors representing the county and Davis, and we're probably going to add Woodland in the near future. Probably going to launch in the spring of 2018. So we have a fair bit of work to do in terms of submitting implementation plans and getting vendors in place and doing a business plan and that sort of thing. So that has to get done pretty much this year, and then in the spring of next year we'd be in a position to start serving customers. But I'll take the opportunity, though. I had a couple questions, and I don't know whether Evan is finished with his, but I have a couple questions.
Please do.
One question, is there anything that you have published that would discuss how this proposed change that is in the proposed legislation, how it would actually work?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, you know, maybe it's not two parts. Number one, if it is put in place eventually, how would it actually work in terms of just operationally, how would you implement the change? And then getting up to that point, what are the steps that have to be taken in the regulatory arena? And maybe the last question is, why would the legislation not charge CAISO and the CPUC to address the problem? And I think everybody that I know agrees that there's a change needed. You have a very specific recommendation that would be embedded in legislation, and I guess maybe I'm asking too many questions, but has CAISO actually said that this is a low priority for them?
Do you have anything
to document that?
Yes. I'm just writing down your questions real quick, and I'll just start from the bottom. Has CAISO said this is a low priority? And yes, they've said so in a couple of different ways. They've said so in the way that they closed the last stakeholder initiative. There was this last stakeholder initiative that they closed. They had called it the TAC Wholesale Billing Determinant. And this entire stakeholder initiative was specifically geared to address whether CAISO should change its billing determinant in order to make sure that distributed generation isn't subject to tax. So that was the mission for that stakeholder initiative. They put out an issue paper. Organizations, including the Clean Coalition, submitted comments on it. And then they closed it without any sort of resolution of the different proposals. They said that they had not planned sufficient resources to staff this. They needed to resolve the issue of CAISO's regional expansion first, and therefore they were going to close the initiative in order to address that higher priority issue, and then would reopen it at a later date. So that's what they've done. And keep in mind, this is the third stakeholder initiative that they've directed the Queen Coalition to comment on, and then later said, this is not the right initiative to comment on the tax issue. So through this process of engaging in good faith with CAISO, where they said, direct your comments here, so we direct our comments there, then they close and say, oh no, direct your comments here. And they said, no, that's not the right spot, direct it here. And now they're saying, okay, don't direct your comments there, we're going to do it in a fourth initiative. I think that taking the official statement for why they closed the previous initiative in combination with the fact that, you know, what they're saying through actions of just closing this off time and time again, it's pretty clear that they're not, this is not a priority for them. And we've heard so much from CAISO management in informal conversations as well. So we have heard the CAISO Board of Governors direct them to address this and to make it a priority. They're going to open up this fourth stakeholder initiative starting really any day now. We're just waiting for them to send out the issue paper. So we are continuing to engage in good faith with them through their process, but we also are a little bit more pragmatic and recognize that in addition to listening to their words, we also have to look at their actions. And since we know that this is not, we've made them aware of this issue for over a year and a half, and we've been moving in fits and starts. So we want to continue working with them, but we're also trying to find alternative solutions as well. So hopefully that answers your question on whether CAISO said this was a low priority. You had also asked, why not just charge CAISO to address the problem? And that is a decent strategy and one that we talk about frequently with our stakeholders. And the reason that we see in order to just charge them to address this problem rather than saying implement the solution is that it would give them more flexibility to find an approach that works for them and all stakeholders. But in fact, that's what we've been trying to do through these previous stakeholder initiatives as well. And we've raised this as a problem. They say it's a problem. They recognize it's a problem. And yet we haven't gotten anywhere. So some part of this is a reaction to basically our lack of progress to date. But the other reason why, and this is somewhat more of a cynic's reason for why not just give them a general directive, the more cynical reason is that we know that the investor-owned utilities have a lot of sway at CAISO. So when you're looking at the vested interests of those IOUs, because when they build transmission facilities, they're not only guaranteed to recoup their costs, they're also guaranteed a 10% return on their equity. So they have this is an easy cash cow for them to continue milking. They have this very clear like conflict of interest where they have a conflict from wanting to provide their ratepayers the most cost-effective energy available, but they also have an interest in getting a guaranteed return on their investment, which they know they can do through new transmission. So if you're a little cynical about that conflict of interest and what kind of interest CAISO also has in having more transmission to be kind of overseeing, that's why we're being a little bit more pointed in what we want to see them do than rather than just giving them a directive. Hopefully that answers that question. You also had asked how operationally this would work. So the way that it would work is we would direct CAISO to change where it's metering transmission usage for the purposes of TAC from the customer energy downflow to the transmission energy downflow. Basically, the end of the transmission line is where they should be measuring transmission usage. So by directing them to do this, what they would have to do in order to actually implement it is make sure that they have revenue-grade quality meters at every substation so that they can specifically say, okay, we can rely on this quality meter in order to give us official billing data. And so they would have to install those meters at the substations that don't already have them. And we've calculated out the cost for what that would really likely come to. And it would be absolutely less than $20 million, potentially far less, but no more than $20 million to implement. In addition, they would have to implement a billing methodology to make sure that they can account for which entity is responsible for which portion of share of the transmission energy downflow. So since there are some parts of California where there's a mixing of customers in any given neighborhood, for example, of both CCE customers and like PG&E customers, for example, they need to institute a methodology to apportion out the share of transmission access charges for each different customer group. They functionally, utilities already do this. It's just a matter of refining it to make sure that customers of any different utility would only be paying for their utility's share of transmission access charges. So this makes a big difference. For example, if you have community choice customers who are buying like a 100% local solar service, for example, their share of TAC is going to be far, far lower than their next-door neighbor who is buying energy from PG&E. So we just need to, this operationally would direct utilities to make sure that they're accounting for that, so that the different entities are only paying their fair share of tax. Most of these changes of what would have to be implemented, aside from the meters, are simply billing and process. And billing and process is already something that is very well established and in place for a lot of utilities. And we know that all of this is completely possible because there are about 25% of California ratepayers who are subject to like a municipal utility that's doing this correctly. So since this is already being done now, we know that it's possible to do, and it's just a matter of making sure the right meters are in place and tracking which costs go where. We know it's possible. It's working right now. We just need to bring everybody to the same methodology. You also asked about resources on the resources on what we're proposing and how it would work. If you go to the Clean Coalition's website, it's clean-coalition.org /TAC, T-A-C. Then that'll bring you to our transmission access charges page. You can find a lot of resources there. There we have a number of graphics that explain how this would work, and as well as explaining what the problem is. And we've submitted a number of filings to CAISO and previous stakeholder initiatives, so you can see kind of the evolution of this project and what the responses have been from other organizations. We've got all of our supporters listed there as well, and you can find also a link to the SB 692 language. So that's the best resource I can point you to for finding more information on this and really diving into the details.
Well, thank you very much. And I won't drag it out. Just one last question. Has there been an independent review of the proposed legislation? Has anybody been tasked to kind of, who hasn't been involved in the discussion so far, to kind of take a look at it and address the questions that I was interested in?
Mm-hmm. We have asked other organizations to verify our projected savings. That was one that we really wanted an outside perspective on, to see if our modeling had any obvious flaws or weaknesses. And we are still looking for somebody to do that. It's a little bit of an undertaking to, you know, ask somebody to model out these projected savings. So we haven't gotten any takers yet. If you can think of any organizations that would be willing to do that kind of third-party verification, I would love to follow up with you. Since this has evolved into a legislative approach as well as an administrative approach, the Senate Energy Committee is in the process of drafting up their own analysis. So I think that's probably the closest we got to a neutral external party looking through this. So I'm excited to see what that analysis looks like. And we know that analysis will come out before April 4th, but I don't have it yet. So that's probably the the place where you're more likely to hear what any neutral third party has to say about it.
Whose analysis is that?
That's the Senate Energy Committee.
Oh.
They do a legislative analysis on any bill that comes through, explaining how it would work, what the jurisdictional issues are, and what the expected results would be.
Will they look at your 25 or was it $38 billion in savings over 20 years?
They'll probably look at it, but I'm not sure if they have the ability to run those numbers. They'll look at the model that we put together. I'm not really sure what else they will do. I'm not sure if they'll try to model that or not.
And could you explain that number again to me? I may not have, may have missed it.
Yeah.
I was 25, I was 38, and whatnot.
Yeah, so we expect the cost of implementing this to be no more than $20 million because the cost of implementing is just adding in the meters where they don't currently exist. So that's the cost.
I was talking about the benefit dollars.
Okay. Yep. So the expected benefits, the way that we got to that number is we created a model where we said, where we found this is the projected TAC rate growth over the next 20 years. We got that information from CAISO. And we also got the 20-year projected increase in load on the transmission system. So that would be the baseline that would be applied to the TAC. So that would get us to the total transmission spend over the next 20 years. So we did that. We found out what that number would look like. And that's our business as usual case. Then we model out different growth scenarios of different quantities of increased growth in distributed generation. So we have like a 1.5 times growth, we had a 2 times growth, and a 3 times growth scenario. We think that the 2 times growth is the most realistic impact of the bill, just based on where current bids for local renewable projects come in. And so we modeled out, okay, if you have twice as much distributed generation coming online over the next 20 years, what portion of load does that avoid on the transmission system? And so then we took that out of the transmission spend and calculated the new TAC rate for the next 20 years under that scenario. So basically, we calculated out that TAC rate, compared it to the business as usual case, and we found that there would be $38.5 billion avoided. We have been dying for a third party to analyze this. So if you know of anybody, or if you are interested in kind of diving into the weeds on this, I would love to talk about it.
I have nothing current. I know that Jerry Braun's colleagues back in PG&E Research did this 25 years ago, looking at some of the benefits of distributed generation in avoiding added transmission costs. They were focusing, I think, out at the weak points at the end of transmission systems and avoiding upgrading transmission systems out at those weak points.
Do you know if they published anything?
We published
Jerry,
a lot.
Jerry, you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, this is Jerry. A lot of publications at the time. In fact, there was almost a genre of studies that propagated outward in the utility industry to do the. It was called a stacked benefits analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And Katie, I'd be happy to share, dig some of that out. It's unfortunately you couldn't Google it because it was almost pre-Google.
I would love that. I'll talk to Sierra after this about getting your contact information so we can kind of point me in the right direction. Thank you.
Yeah.
Jerry, I think you just coined a new term, pre-Google.
That comes with being as old as I am, I think.
Yeah, tell me about it. So anything else here?
Well, I'll just say thank you for letting me participate on this telecon. It's really helpful to get some fresh perspective on this topic.
Yeah, so if anybody wants Katie's contact information, you can send me an email at Sierra, S-I-E-R-R-A, last name D-A-L-L, at M as in Mary, S as in Sam, E as in Edward, and the word forum, F-O-R-U-M.com. So that's Sierra Dahl, M-S-E, forum.com. And I'll go ahead and forward Katie's contact. Or Katie, you could just go ahead and give it right now if you want to.
Sure. Yeah, so my email address is K-A-T-I-E, Katie, at clean-coalition.org. And my phone number is 702-274-7217.
702-274-7217.
Perfect, yep.
And Katie at clean-coalition.org.
Exactly, yep. I know there are multiple different songs of Katie, but it's K-A-T-I-E.
What was the area code again? I'm sorry, I was having trouble with 9 digits. Or 10.
Yeah, no problem. My area code is 702. It's the Southern Nevada area code. That's where I grew up.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other comments or questions? No? Okay, well, we'll go ahead and end this right now then, and you have contact information for Katie if you need to reach her. And we have a webinar going on tomorrow, and that will be Rob Hammond talking about what he's doing working with PG&E and Edison on zero net energy buildings and a program that they put together. So, and how he's working with the utilities, which is kind of an oxymoron, working with utilities on zero net energy. Anyhow, I'll tune in to Rob. It'll be at 9 o'clock Pacific time, noon Eastern time, and hope to see you there.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sierra.
Bye.
Bye.